their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado. This is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And it's good to be back with you here today as we move into the summer months, meaning spring in Colorado. You were recently up on the Pikes Peak. Did I hear that right, Rick?
Yeah, just yesterday.
Nice. It's still a little snow up there.
Yeah, my wife and I went up on the newly revamped and reopened Cog Railway. Nice. It had been closed for a few years.
And I used to like doing that. Are the cars the same or is it completely redone?
Okay. They've been refurbished and everything. And as far as I know, the undercarriage is a little bit different. But in terms of the experience, it seems the same, which is positive.
Yeah. It's always a fun thing to do.
Brand new Summit House. The old one was kind of small. And unfortunately, they're running behind schedule on that. So it's not open yet. It looks a little bit sporty.
Yeah,
by the end of the month, like they're saying, but it'll be nice.
And early June at the top of Pikes Peak, which is a 14,000-foot summit, it's chilly up there.
Especially when the wind blows. It's always funny because you see the tourists wearing their shorts and T-shirts and sometimes bringing no jackets.
Yeah, well, especially in the summer because it'll be in the mid-80s Fahrenheit down at the bottom where you get on in Manitou, and then, bang, you get up to the top, and it's 40 degrees and wind chill. And
it can be
brutal. It's hard to breathe up there.
Yeah, a little bit, yep. Especially if you're coming from sea level, I'm sure.
But yeah.
It's always funny to see some of them, you know, wearing the kind of clothes I mentioned, just not even leaving the terrain now, since there isn't a house to go into temporarily.
True. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we've got a lot of things to talk about this week because we got, I don't know if it was surprising to anybody, but we got a bunch of product announcements and some new software updates. So we're going to focus on the lens announcements. In this case, they were from Nikon. Obviously, it's something that we are intimately familiar with, but we think they're good. So Nikon announced two Z-mount native macro lenses, so we're going to talk about those. They've also announced development of some other lenses, which we'll just mention. And then DxO made a significant update to the Nik collection just this week, so we're going to mention that. We'll probably talk more about it next week when we've had a chance to actually mess around more with the software, because you and I both love those plugins. They're part of our, you know, if you had to buy just one, that would be the ones that we would probably recommend. So why don't you take us through the highlights on what that announcement was about and what's new, because there are some changes, and then we'll get into the meat on the lenses afterwards.
Sure. Yeah, so DxO came out with version 4 of the Nik collection, which has, you know, gone through a succession of owners. Like you said, they're really good plugins. We used them for a long time. We've tried and used all their competitors. Those are good too, but these remain our favorites. They're just very usable and they do what we need them to do. You know, a couple things. You know, when I first saw the announcement, I almost wanted to throttle DxO because it looked like they were just packaging another maintenance update with presets. And, you know, they've got, quote, 250 new presets. My personal opinion is those presets are almost a complete waste of time in general, you know, but it never mind. But it turned out that they had some more substantive changes going on to Silver FX and Viveza in particular. So now they've got Silver FX 3 and Viveza 3. And I would say overall, my thoughts are positive regarding what they've done. They've gone with a new user interface. The old ones were very inconsistent and needed to be refreshed. So they are more consistent now. They have some new selection criteria that you can finesse regarding color and luminosity, just to get the area that the control points encompass better defined, and that seems to work well. They've added some new tonal shaping features in Viveza, you know, at the global level, which are good because it was lacking some of those. Think the equivalent of Lightroom black, white, shadows, highlights, etc. sliders. And with Silver Effects, it's got their clear view feature, which you can view as a little bit of a dehaze thing, but not really. It's different than that. It's something you have to try to really sort out. And that's a very nice feature. The shame of it is they didn't put their color version of that, which they have, into Viveza. And that boggles my mind because it's a good feature. So far, and again, we'll cover more of this later, but muscle memory for me with those two new revised tools is a bit of a struggle. And the fact that the other plugins, which are horribly dated in some cases, weren't updated, makes the inconsistencies even greater. So that's a bit of a frustration. Positive thing, they have added a copy paste feature for settings if you're using them as Lightroom plugins. I haven't played a whole lot with that, but that seems like a good idea. I don't use them that way. So for me, it's kind of a don't care. Main disappointments on them, we've already talked about the remaining inconsistencies and how some like Define and Sharpen in particular are very dated. But I think the main surprise was the lack of Apple M1 support, which I know makes you crazy because you have
It's the thing. And you know, it's something we could talk about another time, but the short of it is that about a month ago, Adobe updated Photoshop to be Apple Silicon native. And you know, the Apple M1 process, the ARM processors have been out now since the fall. And I just got one of these new MacBook Pros, and actually I love it. It's amazingly fast. Really, really good. But when they updated Photoshop to be running natively, all of my plugins suddenly disappeared. They were no longer in the plugins menu, and I was like, "What the heck just happened here?" They were installed. What happened? And it turns out that there's some bit of code that needs to happen to make the plugins visible in the native version of Photoshop. And so your workaround is to open Photoshop using Apple's Rosetta tool and run it as if it's an Intel app. Well, that defeats the purpose. So lately, some of the manufacturers, notably Topaz, have been updating their plugins to at least show up when you run Photoshop natively. And the plugins themselves still run in the Intel mode, but you can at least call them up from Photoshop in the native configuration. And you know, it is a bit of an annoyance because you're basically telling your computer you have to cripple Photoshop to use your plugins, and you shouldn't have to do that. If the plugins run the way they run, I mean, it's all good.
My hope is that the revised ones were written with the M1 support in mind, and they simply need to complete some things with, you know, Photoshop being revised, test them and put them out as a maintenance update. But I don't know that.
Yeah, just, and this is a recent thing. I mean, this photo, you know, it was like all of a sudden someone said, "Holy cow, I upgraded my Photoshop and now my plugins are gone." So if you were using previous, you know, if you hadn't updated to whatever the current version of Photoshop is, this is a no-brainer. If you're using an Intel Mac or a PC, this is a non-issue. So it really only affects a subset of things. But given that Apple has already said that they are, you know, working on implementing their chip architecture through their entire lineup between now and the next year or so, it's important that we have these things that can run natively, at least in some capacity.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I mean, that's
good to know. We'll talk more about them in the future.
Yeah. And I played around with a little bit, and so far I've been very pleased in what they do. And I still think that these are still the best plugins for certain things. I still have not found better tools for black and white, for example. And to see the changes come to Viveza, frankly, are very welcome, because it was one of the oldest plugins in the suite, and it was very dated. So,
and I was seeing stability problems with it too, and so far the new one seems good, but we'll hold off for the rest.
Yeah, well, let's talk about these lenses. And you know, these are ones, well, at least one of these lenses was something that was on the quote-unquote roadmap from Nikon. You know, they have this map that says this is what we're planning to release more or less in the coming years. And so we knew that a 105,
I think all of them have been on the roadmap.
Have all of these been?
Yeah, all of them. Even the pancake ones that will.
Okay. So there's talk. But it's nice when something goes from, hey, we're going to have this eventually, to we've announced it and it's coming. So, yep. So realistically, we got four lenses announced, two of which are available for pre-order and will be available probably by the end of June, early July, at least. And those are the two macro or MC Z-Nikkors, whatever they want to call them. One is, not surprisingly, the 105 2.8, and the other one is a 50 millimeter, also 2.8, I believe. Very different purposes, and well, let's talk about them. I mean, we were both...
Well, how about before we dive into them?
Yeah.
Let's just quickly talk about pros and cons or uses of...
Well, yeah, that's what I was...
focal length.
That's kind of where I was going with these.
Yeah.
Because they have two very different... There's two sort of different use cases for these focal lengths. Because a lot of times people, when they're shopping for a macro lens, and again, this is because you want to focus pretty close on something, whether it's because you're doing one-to-one magnification work or you just need, you know, to be able to focus close on something and fill the frame, there's very different use cases. And sometimes people just look at the prices and go, oh, well, I don't want to spend that much money on a macro lens. I'll just get this cheaper one. And then what they find out is that maybe that wasn't, that shouldn't have been their purchasing decision, depending on the subjects that you photograph. Am I hitting that kind of close, Rick? Yeah. So we both sort of always gravitated to the longer focal length, the 105 or the 180 or even the 200 in the past, right?
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and, you know, the way I have viewed it, because I have owned all three of those ranges for a long time, still do, is, you know, the 50s are nice for copying or very casual usage, sometimes as a replacement for a normal lens. And when I say 50s, I really mean 50s, 55s, and 60s. Mm-hmm. And then you get in the 100-105 range, really nice for flowers, get a little bit more working distance, and then you get up in the 200 millimeter range. And those are really nice if you're photographing wildlife, bugs especially. Then you get even more working distance and you can get nice close shots, but not be right up against your subject and have problems lighting the subject and other things. And I've found that framework or way of looking at it pretty good.
Yeah, and and just to refresh people, working distance, there's the minimum focus distance, which is measured from the subject to the focal plane, you know, your sensor, versus the working distance, which is the distance between your subject and the front of your lens. And right. As you go down in focal length, that working distance gets shorter and shorter. Now, if you're trying to do copy stand work in tight spaces and fill a frame with, you know, you're doing documents or taking pictures of photographs, you know, scanning photographs, if you will. I say scanning, you know, photographing pages in a book or something, then the 50 and 60 millimeter focal length is ideal. because you want to be that close. You don't want to have to move back. But right. for any kind of outdoor and nature photography, most of us have always gone with the longer focal lengths because you want that extra bit of working distance. And so there's a ton of macro lenses in that 90, 100, 105 range, which are sort of the nice sweet spot between you know, price and versatility. And you know, and this one looks to deliver that. So that's, you know, when we saw the announcement, I mean, the first thing that I thought was, okay, what is it that we're gonna get? Because, you know, we both have the 105-28, right? We have the VR, the original, or not the original, but the predecessor, the F mount version. And there's nothing wrong with using the FTZ adapter, right? So what does the new, you know, so these are new lenses. They're more or less the same in terms of what they do. You're not getting any radical new features, really, but you're getting a totally updated optical design, and you're getting native compatibility with the Z mount. So what is that? What is the benefit of that to the photographer?
Yeah, how about we talk about the 105 first, because they're different. They really are.
Yeah, they really are.
So, you know, we both looked at the MTF curves on both of these new macros, and you can usually tell a lot from those. And I'll just say that it's not just a theoretical thing. What we see with the MTF curves translates into what we experience once we have the lenses in hand. It has always worked that way. So with the 105, you see slightly higher contrast, a little bit. The old one
was already
bad.
Pretty high to begin with.
It was pretty high, but much better resolution wide open. Mm-hmm. So it should be a very sharp lens. And you can also get a sense of what the out of focus areas of or bokeh will be like. Will it be smooth or will it be a little bit ragged? And it appears from the MTF diagram that it should be very nice and clean. And that's a desirable thing for any lens, but especially a longer macro lens where you're hoping to have a nice, smooth background behind the subject that doesn't detract from it.
And so what you see in those curves is that you see that resolution line. You see those two, the dotted line and the solid line. They don't diverge much. They tend to just align and parallel each other. And the other thing I noticed too,
and that's how you can tell how smooth the background.
Right. And also just looking at these curves, I've got them up on my screen right now. The amount of fall off is significantly less. So not only is the contrast curve higher, but the resolution curve, which starts at the 0.7 mark for the F mount version, it starts at the 0.9 mark. So we're already up at the high end thing, and it really doesn't start dropping off until you get way out to the edges of the frame. So the edge sharpness is going to be pretty darn good, I would think, too. And some preliminary reviews have shown this.
Yeah. Keep in mind that the MTF curves are for wide open, so they don't tell you how similar the lenses could be at f5, 6. They could be very similar.
That's true.
But yeah, I think it'll be better. You know, a couple other things. You look at the optical design for the new lens and compare it with the old one. About two-thirds of the design, you know, the front two-thirds, looks almost the same. Mm-hmm. It's the back section that's different, and it's clear that the 105 is absolutely a lens where Nikon took advantage of the Z mount, the short flange distance, and the wide actual lens mount to improve sharpness. So you've got a very large rear element that's a spherical, which is a new thing. That's way the heck at the back and far closer to the sensor than the old one was. And I think that's helping out with the design.
Right. And just looking at them too, this is not just like a repackaging of the old lens in a new chassis. No. You know, this is a true redesign. You know, whereas the old lens has one ED element. This one's got three. Whereas right. the old lens has no aspherical element. This one, as you mentioned, has that rear aspherical element. In addition to the nano coating, it's also got Nikon's other coating, which helps Arneo, reduce split. Yeah. Arneo, whatever. You can read them on. I don't even try to keep track of them. But the advantage of the coating is that it helps with resolution, but it also helps with ghost and flare. So you can shoot. You know, Nikon's marketing will tell you can shoot this more into the sun. Now, we have both seen with other lenses that we have tried, you know, from Z lenses, that they control flare awfully darn well. So this should be no exception to that. And that's important for other reasons, because one of the reasons we both, I think, gravitate towards the 105 is that it has some additional versatility beyond just a macro lens that you can add to your bag. You're also getting effectively a 105 portrait lens. And while it's not the 105, you know, 1.4 like you have, it's still a lovely focal length. And my guess is you'll be able to shoot this sharp wide open as one would want to do.
And so a 105 2.8 produces a very nice looking image. It is a very valid portrait lens.
So it's not just the close-up. But obviously, that's, you know, why you would consider it. A few little things, you know, I was looking at the lens, you know, the photos that came out, you know, it's roughly the same size as the previous one, but it is a little bit lighter. It's
like 100 grams for the lens. Yeah. And then if you factor in the FTZ, it's about double that. So that's a lot.
Yeah, well, it's 750 versus 630, so it's more than 100 grams lighter, and yeah, without needing the use of the adapter, so that saves you a little weight. I will say the 105 is kind of a chunk of the F mount. It's noticeably heavy, and there are times when I don't pack it for that reason, unless I'm really doing specific macro work. The angle of view is basically everything else is about the same. 9 rounded diaphragm blades. That's nice. That should give you nice bokeh. But it's got the function button on the side, which is cool because you can program that function button in your camera to have various features like autofocus activation or whatever else is in there. And those may change and evolve over time as there's new firmware. So that's a good thing. It's got the LED or LCD illuminated readout on the top panel, which is a cool feature. Because you can toggle that between, you know, displaying aperture, displaying focus distance, displaying, in this case, magnification ratio. So you want 1:2, 1:1. In addition to the focus ring, it also has the rear control ring. Not something that you and I use a lot, but it's there, and you can configure that with your camera. So it's going to be a pretty nice lens. Oh, it also has a focus limiter, which is something that I think they sort of made better from the previous one. The previous lens has a focus limiter, and your choices were distance, so like 3 meters to infinity or whatever it was, and then or full range. And for a macro range lens, that didn't make it sense to me. So it was like, well, you can use it in full range when you want to go close, and then have to sometimes deal with the camera, you know, racking the focus back and forth when you get really out of focus on near objects, or using it more as a, you know, a regular distance lens. On the new lens, you have the full range option, but then you have a close-up only option, which is a better thing. It goes from minimum to, like, I think, 0.5 meters or whatever.
Yeah. Image stabilization is an interesting thing.
Yes.
With the new lens. And if you were using the old one on a DSLR, you only got two axes of stabilization, pitch and yaw. And one problem with the old lens is it didn't have a whole lot of stops of stabilization, you know, a couple. But it really broke down as you got closer. It really needed more axes. Yeah, if you put that lens on a Z body, you added roll. So you got three axes. Mm-hmm. And that was a little bit better. With this one, you'll get five. So you get those three I mentioned, plus you get horizontal and vertical, which if you think about it and trying to handhold the lens like this up close, which, you know, is nice at times. A lot of times we're using tripods, so it doesn't matter. But sometimes we try to handhold, especially going after bugs and stuff. This should help. I haven't heard a lot about that so far. That's something that we'll evaluate when we have them in our hands.
Right.
And these are high interest ones for us. So
we'll and let me just sort of historical note. The original 105 VR came out in 2006 and it never got redesigned. So it never got VR2. It didn't go through any updates. One other thing you mentioned, so there's the VR stuff. So this is a huge improvement. You mentioned the five axis and, you know, historically speaking, I was talking about how its predecessor hasn't been updated since it came out in 2006. So this is a new lens. And I remember the conversation that people were having at the time, which was, why do you even need VR in a macro lens that you're going to be using on a tripod, right? Well, there's lots of other uses for this lens, but you and I both would argue that we found it helpful, you know, even even in its primitive state. So adding improvements to the VR by getting, you know, not only VR in the lens, but the IBIS in the body, you're getting five axes of stabilization, can only improve situations where you're doing more casual, not one-to-one close-ups, but just those casual close-ups, because sometimes it's just really hard to set your tripod in the right place. I mean, it can be, you know, especially for outdoor and nature photography. This is not studio macro rail types of stuff, but I think we're going to find it's great for that as well. So when I saw this, there was two things that I was interested in. The first was, will it be able to handle a teleconverter? And you've already kind of hinted at the answer to that, which is no. So that is a drawback, in my opinion. It has to do with that rear element. So this design, you know, by virtue of it taking advantage of that short flange distance and the proximity of the sensor, is a win for optical quality, but it's a loss if you're looking to put a teleconverter on your lens.
And it's because the two existing Nikon Z mount teleconverters both have optical elements that protrude too far forward, and with there's no way to mount them. If they were a flat design, and those have certainly been made in the past, that could work. So who knows? Maybe Nikon or someone else will produce some non-protruding ones.
Yeah.
Probably may not be quite as good optically, but would work. And that would be okay.
Yeah. As we both like shooting that way, you get a little extra working distance when you when you put that teleconverter on. So that's a bummer. Now, So when I saw the announcement, you know, we both knew that this was a lens that was coming. So this was not a surprise that they were going to announce it. But knowing that you and I both had the F mount version, and which we liked, you know, you have to ask yourself the question: is this something that you would see yourself, you know, going out and spending money on, and replacing a piece of your existing kit with the new version? And, you know, for a lot of lenses, I mean, we've been very happy with all the Z lenses, but this brings up the question of the price tag, right? Because it factors into your buying decision. It absolutely, you know, does. And we didn't know what it was going to be priced at. We knew it'd be a good lens. We're pretty sure it would be excellent.
When fear is, you know, the Canon equivalent lens, their 100 millimeter macro that was announced not very long ago and due to come out sometime soon, I think in July also, was $1,400.
Yeah, that's getting into that territory of, I have to think about that.
And this one came in at about 1,000 US.
Yeah, it's just under 1,000. And in comparison, it's about 900 for the F-mount version currently. It wasn't that much in 2006 when we bought ours, but the prices have gone up. So I think that by itself sealed it for me that I pre-ordered this lens.
Yeah, same here. And, you know, the other thing is, as I've seen a little bit more about the Canon lens, I'm not that enthralled with its extra features. The spherical aberration correction thing is just kind of like I thought. It's a lot like the old Nikon DC feature, where it's really best thought of as a soft focus option, as opposed to really doing useful things with the background and foreground bokeh. It does that stuff, but at the expense of sharpness.
Yeah.
So if you want the old Hallmark greeting card version of a bunch of roses that's all fuzzed out and stuff, it would do that. And
do that in post anyway.
Yeah, more than 1-to-1 magnification. I honestly would not use that often. So for me, I like the feature set and price combination of the Nikon better than the Canon. Both will be very nice lenses.
Yeah. Well, so you add in the lighter weight, the better optical design, the native mount, one less thing to have to pack. You now don't need your FTZ adapter if you do a lot of macro shooting. It's a good lens. Now, let's just briefly tag onto the 50 because it's a different animal, as we mentioned. It's really
simpler.
It's not it doesn't seem to have quite as good of the optical performance looking at its MTF charts.
Yeah.
But it'll still be a good lens. There's no it's not like these are bad.
But it's normal to see on the MTF curves worse performance as you go shorter in focal length. But it doesn't jump out as a super one. It looks like it'll be fine.
But there are some things. I mean, and again, you have to remember what this lens is intended for, and you have to put it in that context. If you do a lot of copy stand work, this is probably the tool that you want. And so then you have to ask yourself, do I get this in the native format, or do I stick with an older, you know, the 60 millimeter macro and use the FTZ adapter? And it just depends on what you want to do.
This will work with Nikon's ES2 slide and negative copier tool that we've talked about before, and that thing works remarkably well.
Good luck finding them in stock.
Yeah, I'm glad I got mine when I did.
A year.
But it works great. I've really stopped using my film scanners because this is so much easier.
You know, and it's small, it's light. I mean, it's a nice compact lens.
Mm-hmm. I think you could have made a case for it as being a lens that would work well for macro with the Z50 body, because it would be a 75 millimeter equivalent, get you a little bit more working distance. And that is all true. Unfortunately, it doesn't have VR built into the lens, and neither does that camera. Obviously going to be fine on a tripod, but a little bit of a missed opportunity there.
Yeah.
Other things, I mean, I think that's about it. It is a much simpler thing. For us, I think it's very accurate to say it's a lot less appealing. And what I use with that slide copier thing is a very old Nikon AFD 60 millimeter macro lens, which works just great, frankly, with Z cameras. Yeah. You don't need autofocus for that because it's so ridiculously easy to manually focus. And I'll just keep doing that.
Yeah, there you go. Just in the in the essence of completeness, the 50 millimeter lens costs about $600 US, just under that. And in that context, I wouldn't be buying that simply to save money. If you're interested in macro photography, you should really buy the macro lens that suits the style of photography that you're wanting to do, the subject matter. If you want a copy stand lens, you get a 50. But if you want to do nature, you want a 105 or longer.
Yeah, and the way I'd phrase it is if you're doing the nature photography kinds of things, rather than buying the new 50, I would buy a used 105 VR, the F-mount lens instead, because that longer focal length really is helpful in many ways. And then you get VR too.
Yeah. So that's our take on it, but very nice. And, you know, again, I have to say that prior to the announcement with all the prices, that was one that it was on my list as I would probably like eventually get there. But when I saw what it had and what it was priced, I'm like, no, that makes sense, especially in light of our upcoming trip to the Wildflower Photography Safari in Crested Butte. So that's a good thing. very quickly, because we don't have a lot of time left, two new lenses that were announced that are in development, so we'll probably see them later this year. And these are pancake lenses, meaning they're really thin. They're flat, or, you know, very slim design. A 40 millimeter, is it a 2.0? F2. And a 28 millimeter 2.8. What do you think, Rick?
I am happy to see some smaller, lighter options. You know, these can be the idea of you're taking bigger things and you can slip them in your camera bag and you barely notice them until you need them. And that's a nice thing. Also, if you're out shooting and just want something a little bit smaller and lighter and less noticeable. And I think the 40 millimeter 2.0 is the more interesting of the two for me. I like that focal length and the aperture is decent. And I think that could be a nice thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be an alternative for me to either the 35 millimeter 1.8 or 50 1.8, and a whole lot easier to tuck in a bag with some bigger zooms.
I was going to say, because those two lenses are fairly large compared to what they replaced in the F-mount line. Mm-hmm. So a 40 millimeter pancake becomes a nice little fast prime. And again, with the FX Nikon Z bodies, you're getting in camera, you know, in body stabilization. So that the fact that those lenses don't have VR is not a problem, because you've got an in body, just like, so it should be kind of nice. The 28 ain't my jam. You know, it's not my thing. That's just not a focal length that I use, but I'm sure that there are people who like walking around with that, and they're going to get that. It's an F2.8. rather than something faster. But again, you're talking about if you like this focal length and you want to go small, that's what these lenses are for.
Yeah, and I have the same reaction. I like 24s a lot more than 28s, and I like 35s a lot more than 28. So it's it's an in-between that doesn't quite work for me, but it does others, and it's not terribly different than what you'll find on a lot of cell phones, and a lot of people have gotten comfortable with those.
True.
So it's just a bias that we have, and others see that differently. So that's okay.
So the good news is that we've both pre-ordered the macro. I've actually pre-ordered both, because I'm able to get a review copy. I'm hoping from one of our sponsors, B&H Photo, and we will be able to do a review of both of those macro lenses in the not too distant future. I have a feeling I'll only be keeping one of them, however, especially because of my damage to my credit card, of course. But anyway, so that's what we've got for this week. We look forward to having more stuff next week, again, with talking more in depth on the Nick Collection update from DxO. Hope to have some more info on that. And until next time, happy shooting.
All right. Bye-bye.